McLean. Dick Coach's Corner.
You're listening to the Rugby Coach's Corner podcast with your host, Andy Plymer.
For someone to explain.
Bringing you up-to-date coaching concepts from the world of rugby. Sharing ideas to make the game better.
Okay, welcome to episode number 12 of the Rugby Coaches Corner podcast. Joining me today is Gabriel Fulcher. Gabriel's a former international from Ireland who won 20 caps between 1994 and 1998 and was also a member of the Irish squad for the 95 Rugby World Cup in South Africa. He played his club rugby with Leinster and the London Irish, captaining Leinster for the 98-99 season. As a coach, he's had roles with Leinster under 20, Ireland under 18 schools, Belvedere College and St. Mary's College in Ireland. He's now head coach of UBC Old Boys in Vancouver, British Columbia. And it's a pleasure to have him on the show. So welcome, Gabriel.
Thanks, Andy. Thanks for the kind intro.
Yeah, no worries. A lot jammed in there in the last while. So what's a bit more on the detail on the backstory there before you like headed out to Canada and you know what brought you to BC after that?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, I sort of play up until I played sort of in the pro level up until about 2000 when I retired, and I suppose I'd never. I hadn't really intended to be a rugby coach. It's something that I sort of came upon. I was retired a year or two and a friend rang me up and asked to help in a club. And then that became, you know, sort of giving him a dig out for 3 or 4 months became 4 years. And then I was offered a job in the school system, which I worked in. And then I got into some of the rep stuff. So sort of 6-7 years later, I found myself as a full-time rugby coach without really planning it. In terms of the relocation to BC, it actually has nothing to do with rugby at all. So it's kind of, it's a bit of an accident as well. My wife is a doctor and she's taken a position at Vancouver General Hospital. And so I guess I decided to come with her, you know?
Yeah, you kind of have to, huh?
That's what a friend said to me. He said, when I told a friend of mine that when she was going, he said, the first thing he asked me was, well, you know, what do you think? Are you going to go? But you don't really have a choice. And we got an 8-year-old daughter. So it's been great. We've really enjoyed the relocation, and it's a great opportunity for my wife. It's a great opportunity for me. So it's been very sweet. Sort of everything it says on the sort of postcard, that sort of great outdoors, and you know, we're staying here. The Old Boys, the club I'm working at, are located on the beach, and we're only staying a few blocks away. And so, I sort of look out my window, and you can see the mountains and the sea and the islands, and it really is. It's a fabulous place to be. Yeah. It's quite dramatic.
Yeah, as you say, you're the head coach of the UBC Old Boys. For people not familiar with the club, what's a bit of a description of the team, the facilities, those kind of things?
Yeah, well, it's certainly the most picturesque club I've ever been at. You know, as I said, our playing field is literally a couple of yards away from the beach. We share a clubhouse with Jericho Sailing Club, and with views over the mountains. It's a fabulously picturesque club. It was founded in 1974. It's got a very strong identity that still carries through. It was only formed in 1974 by a group of graduates from UBC who wanted to continue playing together after their college days. And they formed a club in 74 and they had some very early success. I think within a couple of years, they won some Vancouver championships. They won the BC championship. So they really got off to a really strong start. And what's great about it is that it sort of still has that sort of college graduate feel. Many of those guys who actually founded it back in 74 are still active in the club. You meet them in the bar. Some of them are still officers of the club. They're still doing stuff. So it's a really nice club that way. I've really, really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the scene.
So how are you finding your first year with the club? How's it shaping up with the league and depth of players and all those kind of good things?
Yeah, I mean, I arrived on the 14th of September, which was actually just a few days before our first league game. So that's just the sort of way it worked out. And
yeah.
So there wasn't much of a lead in. There wasn't much of a pre-season. I pretty much had to sort of jump in and sort of start rowing straight away. But, you know, it's gone okay. Like we've, you know, I suppose the principal objective of the fall season, which is the sort of first round of the mainland, was to qualify for the Premiership proper, which starts at the end of January. So we achieved that. And that was very, very, very pleasing, you know. And now I suppose there's a bit of an opportunity for us to sit back and maybe try and get a little bit more organized over the break. But no, it's been good. We've got a good bunch of players. I suppose what's a little bit new to me is that the clubs here, because of the nature of the Canadian game and the different seasons that, you know, over in the East they play and in a place like Alberta they play in the summer, there's a sort of a transience to squads that maybe wouldn't be something that we would have back home. Like we do have players at home transfer from one club to the other, but they tend to do it occasionally and from one season to another maybe. Whereas here, there's sort of there's a lot more fluidity to the squad. So that's something that that's taking a little bit of getting used to from my point of view. And I think maybe because it's been a World Cup year, a lot of the elite players, a lot of the Rugby Canada players, they were obviously playing World Cup in October, and then they sort of haven't been available. So it's been a little bit like that for the fall season. But look, you know, it's been very enjoyable. We've got a good bunch of guys, and we've got ourselves into the league, which is the most important thing.
Yeah, that's great. So what's been your impression so far of BC Rugby?
I think BC Rugby, from a club level anyway, I mean, I think it's got a strong identity. It's got a strong, history. I think that, maybe it's not the most settled scene in the world, you know. I think the structure of the league seems to change quite frequently. I suppose maybe it's a consequence of, the overall Canadian rugby scene, where you have these different seasons and you have these vast geographical distances, that it feels, you know, on the downside, it feels a little disjointed to me, domestically, I mean, you know, because you got sort of some players can play, some players can't, a little bit disjointed. So, you know, I'd love to see it settle down a bit more. And I suppose my impression is that maybe in the second half of the season, we get a little bit more of that. But there's an awful lot of energy in it. There's a lot of goodwill. There's a lot of good people who I've come across who are working in these clubs to make BC Rugby as strong as they possibly can.
Yeah, there's some great rugby people out in BC. I've got some good friends out there, and I love the place. So more on new BC. What's some of the strengths of the club that you've seen so far, and what are some of the things you'd like to work on moving forward? You know, knowing that you've obviously only been in a job for half a season.
Yeah, I mean, like we've got some really, really strong players. We've got a good group of people in the club, as we just discussed, and there's a very strong tradition and identity, and there's a very strong will and all that. And that's all really important, because that sort of, you know, that's what really gives you the foundation to advance. Would love to see the squad settle down a little bit more in terms of consistency. And technically, I suppose if I was to put my technical hat on, I'd say, you know, we got some work to do on things like core player capacities, you know, and maybe some tactical understandings as well, you know. But overall in the club, I suppose the other big thing I'd love to see is maybe to maybe spend some time growing the youth and mini scene, you know, because I think that at the end of the day, when we just spoke about BC Rugby, and I suppose, you know, if we look at the development of BC Rugby, I think that engaging kids when they're young in sort of fun mini rugby and their families, I think that's probably one of the big stones, you know, that needs to be put in place it's already in place, but it needs to be maybe nourished for the future of the game. It gives you a broad base. It also brings people to rugby clubs, gets them engaged, gets them interested. And that's something, that's an initiative, I think. And my understanding is that Rugby Canada have just started a rookie rugby initiative, so that's very positive.
Yeah, I believe so. And it's, you know, it's a long time coming. I think it's great. It's fantastic that initiative's starting up. And I think it's been going in the US now for for about 6 years, and they're already starting to see the front end of that group starting to come through into some of the age grade stuff. So excited to see what happens in Canada. Okay, so just backtracking a little bit there, back to your international and professional playing career. Coming out of, you said you kind of fell into coaching a little bit. What were some of the challenges from being a former international and professional player to then being a coach? What were some of the tough things? Not necessarily tough things, but challenging things from that transition.
Well, I think the biggest, the first thing I realized within my first season or two coaching was that the big dawning for me was that, through my whole playing career, although I could play the game, I'm not sure I really knew what I was doing a lot of the time, And I think that's the fundamental difference, right? And that sort of awareness dawned on me. I think a lot of us, when we retire from rugby and we get our first coaching role, which very often is within a matter of months or within a year of retiring, very often the natural thing for us to do is we mimic quite a lot. So we do a lot of what maybe our favorite coach when we were a player did, and maybe use some of those philosophies and use some of those. So I think one of the big challenges is for any new coach, and it was certainly the case for me, to be able to stand back and I suppose to understand the difference between being able to play rugby and being able to facilitate somebody else playing rugby. And they're two vastly different things when you think about it. Once I became aware that that was the kind of core challenge, I mean, that really set me on, well, I'm going to say a 10-year path, but it's still going. This pathway to that process, which really, at the end of the day, is what does separate coaches. Because I think the content is relatively easy. Even if you haven't played a lot of rugby, acquiring content and knowledge and know-how in terms of, how do you pass a ball? How do you kick a ball? How do you run an attacking system? Mm-hmm. It's out there. You can access that information. It's really about facilitating players to, is the point of difference. And so that to me, that is the challenge. That is the challenge of coaching,
Yeah. I think, I listened to a podcast called, Off the Ball, which is, an Irish rugby one. Are you familiar with that?
I am familiar with it.
Yeah. So I listen to that religiously. I love it. And they were just discussing a couple episodes ago about Ronan O'Gara. Apparently, he got approached to be involved with the Irish setup, the national senior setup. But apparently, he declined it for that exact reason. Was he's only been out of the game for a couple of years and only in coaching for a couple of years. So he wanted to. He didn't feel maybe that the time was right.
I have a lot of respect for that actually, because. I think not just in rugby, but other sports. I think in recent years, it's become a bit of a phenomenon of the high profile player retiring and going into a sort of a high profile coaching position, whether it's soccer or rugby or whatever. And he goes into it, within a year. I'm not sure they allow for self development. And so no, I mean if that's what Ronan has decided, then I think I would have to say he's done the right thing, because there are many casualties out there of people who went in too early before they sort of found themselves as a coach. I don't want to sound like too mystical, but you sort of do have to find out about yourself and what your process is and modus operandus and philosophy. You need to sort of spend some time. Working on that and knowing yourself as a coach before you'll probably come out the other side,
Yeah, and I think a good example of that is the Martin Johnson era of English rugby.
Yeah. And Martin Johnson, he retired and I think reluctantly went into the English scene, as sort of a figurehead, and it just didn't go well, And I think it If a high profile coach like that finds himself, in a team that's already pretty self-sufficient and has got a really good group of people around him, it can go okay. But the really great examples for me are usually when you look at their history, you realize that they learned this ability, or they did their trade not always, you know, some of them come through as, you know, they're, maybe there's some other kind of educators, maybe they're a school teacher or a college teacher or something like that. But for whatever reason, or however they came along a pathway of knowing, understanding this relationship between, you know, player and coach, student and teacher, and how to facilitate somebody besides just handing them a sort of a stack of knowledge, you know?
Yeah, it is an art, and I don't think that part of the gig can be underestimated in any by any means. So coaches who don't have a high profile then and want to kind of move their career forward into that professional realm, what would be some advice you'd give to them based on your experiences?
Well, I mean, the first thing I'd say to any coach like that is the first obstacle I think that they have to overcome is that exact idea that, you know, they can't do it because they didn't play elite or they didn't play professional. And I would have to say the first thing you've got to do in your own head is you've got to rubbish that idea and you've got to say no, that's simply not the case. So they need to overcome that and not be put off by the fact that they didn't play at a high level. I mean, going back again to the processes of the coach being maybe more important than the content, arguably somebody who really has an ability and a talent to coach, you could argue they could coach anything, you know. I mean, yeah, you could take a great coach. I bet somebody like Wayne Smith could coach tennis. He'd have to go and learn his, you know, how to hold a racket, how to hit a ball, you know, all that stuff. But if you can bring something out in a person, you can arguably bring out anything, you know. It doesn't, the material is just the material. So I think I would try to give somebody that and say to them, look, go ahead, you know, step forward and be confident about that and work on your ability to facilitate a person rather than worrying about the fact that you don't know everything about rugby. Because, you know, the elite pro players, like, it's not some kind of mystery. Like, there's not sort of techniques and contents up there that, you know, we don't know about. Rugby is rugby, you know, in the end of the day. And actually, if anything, sometimes I think when you get into the high performance end of things, you know, sometimes there becomes a reliance on certain ways of doing things. And very often an outsider can come along and say, well, you know, an outsider with a more objective, principled view can say, well, you know, why don't you just do it this way? It might be easier, you know?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, that would be, I would say that I wouldn't have any issue with a person who hasn't played high level rugby. I don't think that's the issue at all.
No, and I don't think either. I think you're spot on there. You know, how you run a session. I think you get that initial kind of wow factor maybe as an international, not that I ever was, but that you get that initial street cred, but then once the rubber meets the road, and you're coaching day in, day out, that gloss is going to wear off if you don't have the skills to establish those connections with the players and be able to articulate your view and those kind of things.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So, okay, so let's look at your coaching then. If someone was to come along to a session and watch you coach, what's some of the things they'd see and hear?
Yeah, well, I mean, what they would see and what I'd like them to see, I suppose, you know, and you know, it's never a perfect, you know, I'm not sure any session is ever perfect. That's the beauty of it, you know. I think what I would like a person to see if they were observing me, a few of the things I'd like them to see. I think I'd like them to see an element of chaos. I think sometimes we coaches, we become afraid of chaos and we think that, you know, 100%, you know, 100% order in a session or perfection in a session, and whether it's passing a ball or tackle or whether it's a game of tip rugby, that we fall under the illusion that if it's perfect, then but I think I long ago learned that, you know, the point of learning is actually the point of failure. So, you know, that idea of chaos and the ability for the opportunity for players to innovate, the opportunity, I'd like to think that they would see players making mistakes, and I'd like to think that they would see players making mistakes and then being given the opportunity to learn from those mistakes. I think that's a crucial aspect to a well-run training session. And players being given the opportunity to problem solve rather than being given answers. Again, you know, I'm not saying, you know, I'm far from you know, I'm far from the perfect coach. And sometimes you just, you know, sometimes we all probably give too much instruction sometimes. But I'd like to think that certainly some or a lot of the time I try to allow the players to solve their own problems, come up with their own solutions where possible. And I suppose the last thing I'd like to think that a lot of the time you'd see players having fun, enjoying what they're doing. I think that's, you know, at the end of the day, that, you know, the why, you know, why are they here playing rugby? Okay, sure, ambition and playing for BC or playing for Canada or playing for Ireland or Australia or whatever, that's important as well. But at the end of the day, I think any well-run training session has to tap into that sort of, if possible, needs to tap into that sort of core that, you know, at the end of the day, we play sport because it's fun, you know, and I'd love to think that some of my sessions at least include that factor.
I love the concept of chaos too. I think because rugby is a chaotic game. It's dependent on so many variables and you can't control all those variables, and they're different every game you play and different in different moments of the game. So your practice has got to reflect that. Otherwise, you're not really practicing for the game. You're practicing to make your practice sessions look really good.
In a training session, we simply can't replicate every or even close to every possible scenario that our players will be confronted with on the field. So what we're more interested in is developing their instincts and also empowering them and giving them the idea that, look, you know, let's try not to think about this as being black and white. At the end of the day, you got the ball in your hands, you got to do something. You're going to run, you're going to kick, or you're going to pass, and just make a choice and do it and then make good of it. That's, you know, and let's not get obsessed with there being a right answer to every scenario, because there's just not. There's many answers to any scenario. And I think that's chaotic environments in training allow players to get that, you know, to get that idea. And then hopefully later, as those players develop, you'll see them on the field of play, not worrying about what's the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do, but just taking a positive action and backing themselves, you know?
Yeah, great. And yeah, the other element there that you talked about was fun. I think like whether they're minis or professionals that like we started playing rugby, no matter who you are, because you loved it. And if it's not fun, you're going to stop loving it. And that's going to affect your performance, whether it be as a coach or as a player. And it always makes me laugh when you hear people like, you know, Monday's experts and stuff like that commenting on a professional rugby team and how they didn't play well that weekend, and that, you know, they're professionals and they should be able to just flick a switch and get on with it kind of thing. But they're not robots, you know, so all players.
Oh, yeah, it doesn't, as you say, it doesn't matter if you're 6 years old playing in mini rugby on a Sunday morning or whether you're playing in a World Cup final. I think that you've got to be in touch with the why, you know, like, why am I here? You know, what's, you know, why am I choosing to do this? The answer to that why has got to have to do more than, you know, if you are playing, if you're a professional, it's got to be to do with more than just, you know, getting played and being on TV, you know? And I think that's true. You know, I think that's, those guys are playing, they're playing for a reason. They started playing for a reason when they were kids, mm-hmm. and staying in touch with that. And I think as coaches, we have a responsibility to maintain environments where players can stay in touch with that. Because if we're too regimented, if we're too instructive, then players forget why they play. And then, you know, you find a drop off in a performance, and as a coach, you're sitting down going, why is the team dropped in performance? And, you know, I've ticked all the boxes and I've put in all the plays and I've run all the systems and everyone knows what they're doing. But there's a whole, you know, there's a factor that's much bigger than any of that. And that's, you know, why your players coming down to you, why are they coming down to the club to train and play and make sure that they never get too far away from that, you know?
Yeah, and it's a bit of the art of coaching in there as well. You've got to be a barometer on the group and, you know, respond accordingly to what you think they're feeling and what they're telling you.
Absolutely, yeah.
Staying with your coaching, what's your favourite area or areas of the game to coach, and what are some of the unique things that you might do in those areas?
I think probably the area that I've probably come to love most or to enjoy most is is this idea of developing, you know, core player capacities. You know, that, I mean, you know, we have the game, of course, and but what interests me more, I think, is being able to coach and to be able to develop the player capacities that allow them to go out there and play that game. And I suppose, you know, I'm talking about basic things like being able to pass the ball under pressure, being able to tackle properly, being able to play the ball out of contact, being able to use your feet to beat a man, etc., etc. And I suppose I think you know, a high level of core capacities really is probably the secret. I think, I mean, when I look at the world game and I say, if I'm going to talk about performance and high performance, I say, well, what's the difference between New Zealand and Ireland, for example, you know? Mm-hmm. And I say, their player capacities are better. You know, I don't think New Zealand have got any moves or plays or patterns that are better. I just think they execute it better than us, you know? And so I think, I think one of the reasons that area of player capacities, basic core capacities of the player, interests me so much is because I see it as the cornerstone of everything. You know, if you're not developing your player's core capacities, then don't expect them to be able to execute plays and systems, you know, because, you know, it's like sending a plumber to fix a leak pipe without a toolbox, you know. he might know how to fix the pipe, but if he doesn't have the tool, he can't fix it. So that I think has become kind of the area that I feel is most important, most important area to coach. In terms of things that I do or that I like to do, I was the last couple of years, I was fortunate to be part of a study that was conducted. It was a joint study between St. Mary's College in Twickenham, which is a sports university in London, and Leinster Rugby, and they ran a project. A couple of guys in St. Mary's were writing a paper on what they call the game-centered approach, and this is the idea of not just kids, but adults as well, mm-hmm. Learning through games, and what is a game, and why are we as humans, why are we so obsessed with games, you know, and how can we use that instinct to in our training sessions to help develop players and to coach better, you know. And so it's something I really embraced and took on, and it's really about coming up with games, and I don't mean just rugby games, but using all sorts of crossovers between one sport and another to come up with games that will help players in every aspect, you know, in the individual skills, but also things like tactical awareness and getting kids to, inventing games to create, to develop kids' tactical awareness. So that's something that I have done that I'm not sure it's unique, but it's probably becoming more and more common, actually. I think it's maybe, I'd like to think that the game-centered approach, particularly with age-grade players, particularly with kids from 15, 16 down, you know, I'd love to see it become a bit of a movement, you know, because I think that in terms of tapping into what we spoke about a moment ago, about tapping into their why, I think that, you know, if you take a bunch of 9 or 10 year olds and you run them through drills, instructive type drills, I think they lose their why very quickly. I think you need to keep them engaged in the concept of a game. It doesn't have to be a rugby game, as long as it's some kind of a game that is tapping into, as I said, whether it's their tactical awareness or whether it's a particular skill set. So that's something that I try to do.
I think from a coaching point of view, it's fun to do that. It's fun to design stuff like that and develop a kind of a series of games that you know have worked before in the past, and then experiment with new ones. And like, I love doing that kind of thing, and most of my coaching is based around that. And I think, like, this is episode 12, and so I would say all of the coaches we've had on have mentioned games, that they are coaching games based ways. That may look different from coach to coach, but I think in terms of, is it catching on, I definitely in the rugby community, I think it is catching on.
I'm delighted to hear it, because even going back to some of the stuff we spoke about earlier in the conversation about allowing players to solve their own problems and come up with their own solutions and make their own mistakes. Mm. I think by engaging them in game style activities, I think really facilitates that, because, you know, you very much act as a facilitator of the game. And sure, you might want to break it to give some technical input, and knowing how and when to do that is obviously becomes part of the skill of managing a session like that. But at the end of the day, you know, the kids or the players having to manage themselves as a group of players in opposition to another group of players in a game environment. I mean, that there is encouraging problem solving. It's encouraging collaboration. It's encouraging leadership. It's encouraging tactical awareness. It's encouraging motivation. It does all those things simply by, instead of putting them into lines and saying, okay, you pass to you, pass to you, pass to you, turn it into a game and tell them, you know, we're going to play three sets, and, you know, the winning team gets a prize or gets some sort of benefit. All of those things that just mentioned, they immediately come into play, you know, and all you've done as a coach is create that environment and then step back and watch it happen.
Yeah, exactly. And then you can manage the constraints of the game. So you can change those constraints to exhibit one particular skill, or you can change a rule to exhibit another particular skill. And then for the athletes, it's constantly dynamic, constantly changing, and they don't get bored of it, and it reflects a real rugby game.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that becomes the skill, that managing the environment and managing activity, that then becomes your intervention, as opposed to stopping and telling a player what they should do. You're managing some factor within the environment that is then bringing about that change instead. And you know, I think at the beginning when you start getting into that philosophy, it can be challenging as a coach, particularly as I was in my early years of coaching. If you're used to telling your players what to do all the time, it really becomes a challenge to yourself, and it's really about you being able to get over that and being able to trust that at the end of the day, human beings are by nature our students. We learn things, we develop things, we imagine things. And, you know, people were learning. I often say this to my last role, I did a lot of coach to coach stuff. I more than once found myself saying to coaches that people were learners before we ever had teachers, you know. You know, man was learning before there was ever a teacher, you know. We have to remember that if we create the correct environment and the correct motivation, our players will learn. You know, we don't have to tell them; they will learn, and then the whole thing becomes so much more rewarding. You know.
Yeah, I think for a lot of coaches too, it's that challenge of the difference between explicit learning and implicit learning. Like explicit learning, like drill-based stuff, it's really easy to say, yeah, they're learning because it looks good now. But are they actually learning? Whereas implicit learning sometimes can be a little bit harder to measure. So you get a bit nervous about that.
Yeah, and the drill-based learning that you just mentioned, I think the question you have to ask yourself is what are they learning? They're learning to pass the ball in a 10x10 box. Does that mean that they can pass a ball in the heat of a game when there are multiple variables at play? Not necessarily. Can they improve their passing? And do we never put them in lines? We do, to give them, you know, some tips and some, you know, well, we do when we feel we need to maybe spend a few minutes giving them some coaching tips. But even the great coaches that I've come across, they're able to do that within the game. They don't need to break out, you know. And I think it boils down to this kind of drill versus game. For me, it boils down to this idea of, you know, are we telling our players what to think, or are we teaching them how to think, you know? Yeah, and that's the fundamental difference, you know, that we really, our job really is to empower them to think and teach them how to think about the game and how to think about their own development, not necessarily exactly what, you know. I mean, who's to say? Who am I to say what the best way of playing a game of rugby is? At the end of the day, you pick the ball up, you run down the other end of the field, and you touch it down. You know, the principle of the game. And if you don't have the ball, you stop the other team doing that. And everything else really is only there to facilitate that basic principle, you know. And yeah. I certainly don't want to ever, you know, restrain anyone from coming up with a new way of doing that, you know.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think you're bringing up some really good points, and it's going to be helpful for coaches out there to implement some of these concepts into their day-to-day coaching. Okay, well, we always end the show with four questions. First question that we usually ask is, who was your favourite player as a kid growing up or as a teenager kind of growing up?
Yeah, I think, I don't know if I was the kind of person that latched. I was trying to think about this, and I don't know if I had a favourite player.
Yeah.
You know, there was no one player I followed, but I suppose, you know, getting to the heart of it, like what were big things in my childhood that really, I suppose, drew me to rugby and kind of captured my imagination? And in terms of maybe not a player, but an event or a group of players, I think the thing in my childhood, I can remember the Wallabies coming to the British Isles in 84.
Oh, the Grand Slam.
So they won a Grand Slam, but it was more than that. It was the birth of a lot of careers that went on to win World Cups, and, you know, David Campese and Michael Lynagh and these guys. I think that was pretty much the early days for them, and they were incredibly successful. They beat all four nations, and they beat the Barbarians, I think.
Yep.
But as a kid watching it, it was more than that. They played with this sort of innovation and wonder and limitlessness that I think. It drew a lot of people to rugby, and I was a young kid at the time, and I just remember going, "Well, you know, I want to do that," you know.
Yeah.
And so, rather than pick a player, I would say that Wallaby side of '84.
Oh, there's some beauties in there too. The Ella brothers, and what a team! And I was listening to Michael Lynagh in an interview talk about that tour, and he said they played something like 14 games in that tour.
It was a
proper tour. There was and now you'd see, I think there's a Grand Slam attempt coming up this year for the Wallabies, or in the spring, and they're maybe going to play like 5-6 games, and it's pretty great. Amazing. Yeah. Okay, and who's your favourite player now, or players now going around?
Yeah, there's a lot of good guys around. I think the guy that I've always admired for the last number of years is Conrad Smith, you know, who plays, he's obviously been in the All Blacks for what seems like forever now. And, you know, it's not just, I mean, he's a very exciting player to watch. He's got everything. He's got his own, he's got a line break in his own right, but he's got a great ability to use people around him. And he seems to know instinctively, you know, when to do what. I suppose for me, he kind of epitomizes the thinking player, you know, the thinking midfield player in a game that over the last number of years, and I wonder, are we emerging from it a little bit now, but we've sort of gone through a phase, I think, in the pro game of, you know, big, strong people running, you know, a yardage style game where, you know, big, powerful athletes, sort of 1-2 pass plays and looking for yards more than maximal opportunity. And I think Conrad Smith is a type of player, a thinking type of player, a multifaceted player who has kind of, who has excelled in his own right in that environment where, you know, he's not the biggest, most powerful go forward player probably in the world, but he's able to play in a way that I suppose, is innovative, and it's responsive.
Yeah, even though he plays for the All Blacks, he's definitely one of my favourite players. I think what I like most about him is his defence. Like, when do you ever see Conrad Smith miss a tackle? Like, I'm struggling in recent memory to pinpoint one.
Yeah, that's the thing. And you tend to look at, you know, you tend to see him, and he's got his, you know, he's kind of got those sort of silky feet that, you know, of a centre of old. But actually, there's that whole other side to him. Like, he's just made of steel as well, you know. And I think he's. I don't know. Is he retired? He must be coming up.
Yeah, he has. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's a shame.
Okay. Well, on to coaches now. Who's one of your favorite high profile coaches going around at the moment?
I think my favorite high profile coach, and you know, sorry, it's another New Zealander now, you know, I think Wayne Smith, you know.
Yeah,
I think for me, I was I was lucky enough in 2008, the All Blacks came to Dublin to play in 2008, and I was coaching with Leinster under-20s at the time. And we had a conference with Wayne, and it wasn't so much about his role as the All Black with the All Blacks at the time. It was more about age grade development, and he had been quite involved. I think he began his coaching, or he did a certain amount of his early coaching with age grade teams in New Zealand, and we were talking about pathways and priorities and things like that with age grade rugby. So I was very fortunate to meet him then, and we sort of, a group of us, were able to discuss it, and I was just hugely impressed by his philosophy, I suppose, you know, and this idea that, I mean, he spoke about the New Zealand age grade philosophy boiling down to, you know, a sort of a single idea that they wanted to develop players. They want to develop 16-year-olds with higher skill sets than anyone else in the world. And that really, at the time, for us, was a little bit of an eye-opener, because it's not that we didn't think that, but it's that there was so much emphasis at the time on the athlete and the strength and the power and the, you know, all this sort of idea. But you could see that they were saying no. And his idea was that, look, if you give me a player, if you give me a 16-year-old who can use his feet better than anyone, who can pass better than anyone, than his peers around the world, then we'll turn him into an athlete between, you know, 17 and 22. You know, we're not worried about that. And so I really admired that. And also his, he has this great sort of willingness to allow players to think for themselves, you know, and I don't think he, certainly when you listen to him, he never has any intention of telling his players what they should or shouldn't do. He's much more of this school that, look, you know, at the end of the day, do what you feel is the right thing to do, and it'll be the right thing to do. You know, you know, it's a sort of a self-fulfilling thing. He's a guy who I think really understands coaching, and I have a lot of admiration for him.
Yeah, I'm a big fan too, and you know, just I've only seen some of the stuff that's out there online, and just the messages he's saying and the way he communicates with players in those little bits, it's impressive. And just from reading some literature and that on him as a coach, he seems to be one of the innovators of you know, athlete centered coaching in the rugby kind of community, when at a time when it was a pretty coach-centered era.
Yeah.
All right. So, okay. And then the last question, who's a lesser known coach, who's digging away, doing the hard yards that you think needs a mention?
Yeah. I'm not sure I could come up with a great solution for this one, except that the guy I was thinking about, he's not really a lesser known coach, certainly not in the Southern Hemisphere, but he's kind of relatively new to us. Up in Ireland is Pat Lamb, who's in the he's in the pro scene. So,
doing great stuff.
But he put in a lot of time. I think he was with Auckland, and he's done his time. But he started coaching in Ireland with Connacht about 18 months ago, and just he's managed to tap into something there, which suggests to me. And I've never met the guy. Well, I think I played against him many years ago, but I've never met him as a coach. But he seems to have tapped into something there, because, you know, Connacht is, as you know, is one of our four pro teams, geographically it's the part of Ireland maybe with the least rugby tradition, you know, and it's got the lowest population, so it wouldn't be traditionally a rugby stronghold per se. And for many years they carried on in the Pro 12, and they had their, you know, they've had their sort of ups and downs, and they've had their victories, but they've consistently struggled to sort of, you know, get right up there among the sort of top teams in Europe on a regular, consistent basis. And this guy comes along, and 18 months later, they're top of the table, and they're doing everything so positively. So he's a guy, like I said, I know he's not exactly an unknown, and the guy had a pretty legendary career, and he coached in Auckland. But in terms of the international game for the future, I wouldn't be surprised to see him going quite a long way in the coming years, you know?
Yeah, and I think, I've been kind of listening to that podcast again, that Off the Ball, and he comes up often, and he was interviewed once. I loved the interview and some of the philosophies he has, like, you know, guys shaking hands at the beginning of each session, and they say their trademark, and then they ask some personal questions, and they beat Munster at Munster for the first time in, I don't know, I think it was like 17 years or something like that.
Just this weekend, yeah.
Just the weekend gone, and like, so.
Yeah, not many, but several, you know, strong coaches have gone into Connacht over the years and haven't been able to crack that, you know.
Yeah.
It's culturally much more challenged than our other provinces, you know, for the reasons I said, you know, it's not geographically a stronghold. Other sports very strong over there. Wouldn't naturally have much of a player base or even support base that some of the other provinces don't have. And arguably don't have the budgets either. And so he seems to have done a wonderful job in a pretty short space of time. So there's some kind of magic going on there.
You know, they've only got one member in the national side, I think, in their...
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Is it Madigan or...?
No, it's Robbie Henshaw.
Henshaw, that's right, yeah. Yeah, so for them, but obviously it's not just, you know, there's something more to it than the superstar players. So, yeah, it's a great story, that one.
Yeah, I know, and I hope they're at the top of the table. It's only coming up to the halfway mark, but I really hope they can stay up there and challenge, get themselves into a Pro 12 final or something.
Yeah, it'd be great.
It'd be a great thing. Fantastic. And not just for Connacht, it would actually be a great thing for Irish rugby as well, to have a fourth team, you know, get into a final. Like, the other three have all won European Cups. They've all won Pro 12s. But to see them getting up there would be a huge boost for us.
That'd be great. Yeah, fantastic. All right, well, I've had a great time with this chat. I've really enjoyed it, and got a bunch of notes written down. So, you know, I learned a lot as well. So really appreciate you giving up your time and coming onto the show and having a chat.
No, it's all. No, thank you for giving me the opportunity.
No worries. And if I'm in BC soon, I'll come down to UBC Old Boys and check out a session and say good day to a few of the guys I know there.
Yeah, please do.
Awesome. Okay, thanks a lot, Gabriel.
Thanks, Andy.
Cheers, mate. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Rugby Coaches Corner podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a review via iTunes and keep listening for the next episode. You can also follow us on Twitter at @RugbyCoachSCNR or via the website at therugbycoachescorner.com. Until next time, keep sharing ideas to make the game better.